She's alive. Alive.
So since we have like Easter weekend coming up, we're recording this a little bit early because we got stuff to do Easter weekend.
We do.
Might be a shorter episode. I don't know. We got a few bits and pieces in front of us here to do. But because we're recording this on Wednesday for the weekend update, I got breaking news. That's why I had to explain that we were recording it earlier. Otherwise, it'd be like, this isn't breaking news. This broke on Wednesday. And you don't have this on your sheet of stuff here.
Okay.
But an hour ago, comicbook.com, and I've seen this in other places as well, has confirmed that Chucky creator Don Mancini says new Chucky movie is happening.
I copped that, all right.
So, as Chucky fan, this is the article. I'm not claiming credit for writing this. As Chucky fans wait for season 3 of the series to return with its last 4 episodes, Chucky creator Don Mancini is already thinking about the future. After living on the big screen in feature films for years, Chucky made his leap to TV just 3 years ago, and now he might be going back to the movies. Speaking in an interview with Scream Dream podcast, Mancini confirmed that he is in the early stages of working on a new Chucky movie. Maybe this is the Chucky Goes to Space he's been talking about fucking ages. Further details about when that might happen or if this development now means that the Chucky TV series won't be returning for more episodes has not been confirmed. I was wondering the exact same thing the minute I saw it. I was like, is this his nice way of telling us that enjoy these last 4 episodes?
Could be.
Because we won't be getting more. Because I'm always surprised when a horror movie or a horror show gets renewed. Especially one as niche as Chucky.
I know Chucky's
an icon, but you still rather love him or hate him, and I don't think there's...
Considering Slasher got renewed after that season, that was terrible.
But like the same as Netflix wanting to fucking knock out as much as they can. And to be fair...
Netflix cancel everything.
To be fair, Slasher has been entertaining more seasons. The acting can be a bit hammy in most seasons, but by the end of each season, you and me are both sitting there going, I wonder is it this person? I wonder is it that person? I wonder is it this person? Except for the season where they did the Saw kind of Hunger Games Saw
That's
thing.
That's the one I'm on about, where they're in the big house and it's the grandfather. That was off the walls completely. That's what I'm surprised it got renewed after.
But the blood and gore and it's fucking mental. And to be honest, remember the apartment... The season where they're in the apartment block.
Oh, yeah.
That was really good. And the last season wasn't bad. I mean, that had us guessing up until the end. And then there was that nice twist where it kind of caught us off guard. The only thing I didn't like, and the thing I didn't expect to come back after the first season, because I was really bitterly disappointed when they gave up the identity of the killer at the end of the second last episode.
Because I like that
last scene reveal. It keeps you guessing up until the last minute, and then boom, it's this person.
Yeah.
So kind of, and because you're expecting that, it was a bit of an anti-climax to have this person revealed in such a casual manner as well, because it's just a cop standing in front of a mirror or something like that, and the next thing he pulls the mask on, I was like,
I
don't know, maybe it's just because I was introduced to horror through Scream, and I've always had that kind of love of the, you know, where they grab the fucking edge of the mask and rip it off, and it's like, this is the person who it is, and everyone goes, so anyway, back to this. Like anyone in this business, I want to do more things, Mancini said when answering questions about future projects. I mean, at this point, though, if it's only Chucky, I'm totally cool with that. What else has Don Mancini done? Has Don Mancini been involved at all? I've never thought to look, to be honest with you.
Are you looking? I am looking. Chucky. Cellar Dweller in 1988. The Dollhouse is a thing with Chucky in it.
What?
The Dollhouse, 2017. Looks like it's animated.
And Chucky's in it.
The Dollhouse documentary horror is... The Dollhouse is its short 2017 documentary horror about Child's Play from Kyra Gardner, whose father's longtime puppeteer, Tony Gardner.
I've seen that going around the place.
It takes a very unique look at the Child's Play franchise and the Odd Family. The killer doll has a mask around him. But in terms of...
But when you look at timeline, when would he have had time to do anything else?
He has I can't pronounce the name of it, but there is kind of like a soft, plushy kind of puppet that does look quite similar to Chucky, but that's 1993, so that would have been after Chucky.
Well, he made that.
Yeah, he's credited for it here.
And what is it, a movie?
Yes, I'm looking into it.
And is that all he's got?
No, In Search of Darkness in 2019, that looks like a movie as well. Clapboard Jungle there's a few here, but not as big as Chucky.
Anyway, obviously, again, he's been busy with Chucky, and that is due in large part to the fact that Don Mancini not only wrote every movie in the franchise, but directed two of them. Only two of them? I know he did Bride of Chucky. I wonder if he'd do Seed and then get somebody else in to do the last two, the latest two. Again, you might want to look that one up for me there.
I'm in the process of looking all these up. Thank you very much.
He's a showrunner on the TV series, obviously. So that in mind, whatever form this new Chucky movie takes and how it may or may not affect the future of the Chucky TV series, one thing is certain, the story will continue in some form and canon will remain. That was always the upside for me looking at the Chucky TV show. Because usually, you know, like, we'll just say, for instance, when this Halloween TV show comes or the Camp Crystal Lake show comes, if that was to get cancelled, we'd be waiting another few years to get our hands on more Myers or more Jason, and it would be a reboot and we'd be kind of left hanging. And if one of those seasons ends on a cliffhanger, you're left kind of fucking hanging. The beauty of Chucky is he will continue to fight. Now, whether you like the story, you dislike the story, parts of the story, whatever, like Seed of Chucky wasn't exactly well received by some fans, they will continue with the canon. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
So if Chucky, the TV series, happens to end on a cliffhanger, we're still going to find out how that all plays out eventually. Yeah. You know? Because, I mean, he did it to us with the movies. He ended Curse of Chucky, Cult of Chucky on a cliffhanger, left us fucking hanging. And if you haven't watched Curse and Cult of Chucky, then you have no idea what the fuck is going on when you go into the TV show.
Yeah.
So he's constantly kept you kind of coming along. Now, the other side of it is, how much longer does Brad Dourif manage this job?
Getting old, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you've kind of suggested Fiona Dourif as a replacement.
It's because she looks perfect.
Yeah, but you don't really fucking see Brad Dourif. Brad Dourif is about to make his first appearance as Chucky. Well, I know he was in Curse of Chucky in a flashback scene. I would say he's only featured physically in three movies.
Yeah, but his character has featured physically in the TV show.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. Fiona got up.
Yeah, but that wouldn't really equate to her being the voice of a talking doll.
Oh, the voice, sorry. Yeah. No, I thought you meant 99%
of Chucky is him in the doll, so you're not going to...
No, I get that. I just thought that you meant from...
Oh, is an actual being Charles Lee Ray? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did a great job, but it fucking left me and you confused for the best part of an episode.
That's what I meant when I suggested her, not the voice.
No. I meant the voice. Yeah. I still reckon the guy that plays... Trevor in GTA 5 will be the best person to take on that role.
Yeah.
But and then bring Mark Hamill back for the "Hi, I'm Chucky, you want to play?" we got to wait and see what happens there. I mean, I suppose we'll have a better idea after we see these next four episodes, which are coming probably really fucking soon. I got to watch the first four episodes again just to remind myself what's going on.
Yeah, we can do.
Especially that voodoo doctor scene that was... quite possibly my favourite fucking scene in any movie ever. What do we have next? Moving on, we have the fucking crazy. Late Night with the Devil, Sunday box office numbers come in at 666,000. Fuck.
That's a lot.
It's scary, isn't it?
It is.
Do you think they planned this somehow?
As in, stop letting people in when they hit the 666,000 mark.
Or, maybe started fucking handing out free tickets after they hit 666.
Oh, yeah. 666 after tax.
Huh?
666 after tax.
Or if they were under, they just bought up the tickets to make it 666. Because, again, you can't buy publicity like that. Well, you can if you buy all the tickets and not let anybody else in.
How much were the tickets?
I don't know. Hang on, we'll see what this says here about this. It comes from joeblow.com. Buried deep within Variety's weekend box office report is a rather eyebrow-raising stat. Late Night with the Devil, which is proving to be one of the biggest breakout indie hits in recent memory, is reportedly on track to gross an estimated $666,666 at the box office today.
That's fixed.
The final numbers aren't in, but what a ghoulish, perhaps even unholy surprise this is. It's the kind of publicity you can't buy, and to be fair, Variety report might be off a bit. When I put together your own box office report here on Joe Blow, I tend to follow the numbers payout by Paul Derghabedian, I don't know, at ComScore, and so far he hasn't listed Late Night with the Devil's Daily Gross. It's everywhere, so I imagine it did get close to that. And apparently competed pretty well with, actually beat out Immaculate.
Yeah?
In the box office. And Immaculate's supposed to be pretty good too. We haven't seen it yet.
No, I haven't. Yeah, no, we haven't seen it.
But my new crush, Sydney Sweeney's in it, so I'm going to watch it. If I got to watch Jason Momoa movies for you, you got to watch it.
When have I ever said Jason Momoa's in this? You got
to
watch it.
She forces me to watch Aquaman every night before we go to bed.
You love it after.
Next thing getting great reviews, and I'm happy to say it's getting good reviews, is Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2. And already after me saying it last week, people are already going, well, the first one wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck ye, assholes. You've been talking shit about it for a fucking year. Don't jump on the bandwagon. Well, do jump on the bandwagon. I want it to get good. This seems like they're saying basically it has everything the other one has, but it's after adding to it. It's got like all these more layers to the story. Mm. There's a bit more campiness to the campy fun to it.
Yeah.
Obviously, the gore is upped. They're going to look into the background of, you know, what everybody wanted and the lore of 100 Acre Wood, what went on in their childhood outside eating honey and doing kid stuff. But what they're kind of hinting at is that is all kind of almost like a PTSD safeguard that Christopher Robin put up. His brain has blocked out the bad stuff.
Okay.
And made him romanticize his childhood with these animals.
So they weren't always good.
No, well, we might be getting to a see
like the South Park animals. That
they've always been evil. Yeah. Yeah. The woodland
critters.
Christmas critter. The woodland Christmas critter. Christmas critter. Woodland. I don't know. Christmas critters is what they were anyway.
Yeah.
That episode was fucked
up. That was the first episode that I ever saw.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
I saw like the third episode ever released when it came out.
Nope. I heard about it. My cousin loved it. Oh, God. No.
But,
first one.
Holy shit, that's like fucking. I remember watching, just chilling out watching that. Like, I mean, like, I love you know.
Me, I will, but you have to take into account that you're older than me
by 3 years.
Well,
if I saw the first one in 1997, then logically, if you're going off that kind of rules, you should have been watching it in the year 2000.
When I was 10.
Well, I was 10 when I saw my first episode.
I don't know. I had it in my head. You'd have been 12.
Nope. It came out in 97, as far as I know.
Oh.
So that's why I'm guessing 97. It is 97.
How did you manage to watch the third episode in 1997 in Ireland?
Sky One.
Oh. I
forget. It would air in America one week and a week later, a couple of...
No.
See, especially when it was something as popular as that. When something like caught fire...
Mm.
The Americans would show it. It was the same way as they watched wrestling. Monday Night Raw, you could watch live on Sky Sports. Or you could watch that in Sky Sports.
Again, we had the two channels.
Oh, so, we were on and off with the...
We got to a certain stage, all right, where we're on and off.
But South Park, I'm almost sure that is 1997. Because the movie came out in 99, I think. 1997. I'm a bit of a South Park expert, to be fair, so I shouldn't have even had to look that up. But yeah, so Winnie the Pooh, what does it say? So reviews, we'll have a quick look at this review, because I am curious to see what they have to say about it. So this is from bloodydisgusting.com. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey broke the internet when it was first announced back in 2022. Disney fans and everyone else were caught off guard by the concept of the iconic toy bear and his stuffed pals becoming feral. But enough time has passed that to where this current genre practice turning public domain material into horror films is less of a shock. However, it didn't stop folks from reacting with surprise when a sequel was reported last year. I wasn't surprised. The sequel was fucking reported literally like a week or so after the movie got caught fire. So basically, the increased budget is evident on screen and partly why Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2 surpassed the original. Returning director Reese Frake Waterfield is joined by Summer of 84 writer Matt Leslie, and their collaboration is a quasi-reset of the first Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. The prior film is now treated as an in-universe adaptation of Christopher Robin's horrific ordeal. So does that mean that what happened in the first movie is just how Christopher Robin saw it, and there might be another kind of version of what happened in the first movie?
Possibly.
The meta touch gives the sequel room to acknowledge the original film's deficiencies as well as a chance to expand on the lore. As the real Christopher Robin tries to now move on with his life while also enduring accusations from all sides. Winnie the Pooh, the yellow bastard as they call him. Ugh, they're not going to go like the mean one. And his wicked storybook pals brew up their next violent course of action. Beyond its opening act, the previous Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey was much too plotless and straightforward. It's a slasher movie. Supposed to be. Its only ambition was reimagining Pooh and Piglet as merciless killers. Sure, audience mainly tuned in to see these characters carry out the massacre, but there is no denying that the execution was monotonous. I don't know, people just expect way too fucking much. From probing Christopher Robin's extensive trauma by revealing the origin of 100 Acre Wood villains, the second film is more structured and engaging. On top of a better story, Winnie the Two. Hmm. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2.
That's what they should have called the second movie.
Winnie the Two.
Yeah.
Benefits from higher production values. The detailed creature designs and suits are more convincing than before. They just don't look like actors in masks anymore. I found the old mask creepier.
Yeah?
So it's kind of, again, I kept comparing him last week when we were talking about it to Michael Myers. And I think that Winnie the Pooh mask gave that same blankness that Myers had. Except it still had a lot. Without moving, there was a lot of emotion in that face without moving. And it was all, the emotion was shown by literally fucking slight movements of his mouth every now and again.
Mm.
And the dripping of honey and drool from his mouth a lot of the time. And that little one tear he shed. Where he's passed with Christopher Robin.
Aww.
Yep. It's a tearjerker. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. And we're going to see that within the next few days because it's in the cinema at the moment. I'm hoping it's straight on to
streaming
directly afterwards, in which case it should be there by Friday. Tomorrow's its last day in the cinema.
That was quick.
Thursday, the 28th. So I'm hoping Friday, Saturday, Sunday might show up somewhere to watch. I can't see where yet, but we'll find out. One not doing it so good is Blumhouse's Imaginary. And we were looking forward to this when we saw the trailer.
I'm still looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
It's not doing very good at all.
I'll watch it myself. It's fine.
I'll watch it with you. I mean, it's only PG-13, so I mean, the kid could watch it with us.
The kid?
Right. I mean, fuck's sake, he's watching worse than this. But do you get a feeling like people have just soured on Blumhouse?
Why?
Well, like, Halloween got shat all over, and they made that. And all this, and people aren't happy with this. And I mean, I'm pretty sure they made Megan, and people bitched and moaned about Megan.
What's wrong with Megan?
I don't know, I loved it.
So did I.
But people were not happy with Megan.
Is it because it's PG? No, I know Megan's not PG-13. What's Megan? Is Megan PG-13? Well, there's your problem.
Megan is PG-13.
There's your problem. Is it because they're making PG-13 movies? Oh.
Well, generally, ghost movies paranormal stuff can be PG-13 because you're not going to get the blood.
Is that their equivalent of R-15s?
Kind of.
Okay.
Do you not remember we had a PG-12 when we were kids?
We did, but that was parental guidance if you're under 12. But it was still, you didn't have a PG-13. We had the PG-12, we didn't have a PG-13.
But yeah, I know that, but it's the same thing, I think.
Oh, you see, I thought they had lower ones.
If you're under
13,
you can watch it with a parent. If you're over 13, it's grand.
I was just wondering, what is that? Is it our equivalent, the equivalent of our 15s?
Anyway, this movie has garnered 30.5 million worldwide in the box office and did so badly that they had put it on video on demand already. Took it out of the cinema and put it into...
Shit one.
I'll still watch it, which I think it's an interesting concept. Actually, it's very much Winnie the Pooh.
Mm-hmm.
They apparently, from what I can get, it is this girl who has a connection with her teddy bear. And then she leaves and then she comes back, but he's not happy that she left. So basically the plot line to Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 1.
Oh.
Except this one isn't the big yellow, angry Michael Myers-like monster.
It's a cute, cuddly one.
See how cute and cuddly it is after you watch the fucking movie. But we'll check it out. We'll come back to it when we have had a chance to give it a watch. Hey kids, can't get enough of that blood, guts and gore? Then head on over to our Patreon, where for just $5 a month you'll get exclusive access to our true crime show Real Monsters and horrific history tales from Playing with Bones with Amy Rose, along with early access to our minisodes and ad-free access to everything else. All this and loads more horror-tastic extras from the Horrorverse. So what are you waiting for? Permission? Go nick your parents' card today and subscribe now at patreon.com/ It's Alive Alive Pod. Remember, that's It's Alive Alive Podcast, a really, really fake true crime horror podcast. It's Alive Alive, all the guts and gore with none of the guilt. Good news, though. We got more Scream.
Yes.
More Scream news. And first of all, we have Courtney Cox is almost alive, from what I can tell. That's what I'm seeing around the place. Okay. They're pretty much sure
that she'll be back.
She is coming back. They are also trying to bring back in Patrick Dempsey, who you were telling me is Dr. McWhat.
McDreamy.
And I said he should be Dr. McScreamy, no?
Yep.
Yes.
Good
because
joke.
Because he is in Thanksgiving and Scream.
Meaning he can't be the killer in Scream. Or will they?
People mightn't have seen Thanksgiving yet.
Oh, well.
Spoiler alert. That's a big spoiler alert. Gotta be quiet.
Sorry.
That's a new enough movie. That would crack me the fuck up.
All right. Well, let's rewind so and we can talk away as normal.
Send your hate mail to Amy Rose. And will he have time? Yeah, I suppose if they shoot really quick, because as far as I know, Thanksgiving 2 is scheduled for next year.
It is. Yeah, it's quick enough.
So, well, it's 2 years.
Yeah, it's still quick enough today. Mm-hmm. Good job, Scream.
So that's what they got so far, which kind of worries me because we're going into the third movie of this trilogy with the same tree that made the third Scream movie that wasn't all that great.
Fine.
The only difference is the last time when they made Scream 3, they left Kevin Williamson out of it, and this time he gets to direct it. So maybe.
Maybe.
It's our chance for a redeeming third Scream movie.
Yep.
Because I don't give a shit what all of you say. Scream 3 sucks.
I enjoy
it. I'll watch it every fucking time. It's cheesy, but it's always going to be the bottom of the list of every Scream fans. Do you know?
Yeah.
Rankings.
Yeah.
Speaking of Scream, we got a copycat Scream guy.
Uh-huh.
Scream costume clad man wielding chainsaw and knife kills neighbor in Carbon County, police say. A chainsaw and knife would be crazy.
Yeah.
So it was like a power packed chainsaw. Got a little battery in it.
Oh, cool.
And originally it said that he wanted to scare the neighbor.
And just killed him instead.
Well, yeah, apparently he fucking, I don't know, let's see. Does it say how many times he was stabbed? He stabbed in the head, so I don't give a shit what you say. That's scared the fuck out of me. Stabbing him in the head, that is absolutely
that was fucking with the knife.
Mental. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think he used the chainsaw. I think the chainsaw was the scare tactic. But it was so bad that I wonder, did they think this was somebody really trying to recreate Scream? Oh. Because they stopped the kids. They had police escorts for the kids going home from school and shit.
Maybe. He was struck with the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah, there it is. He was struck with the chainsaw and the knife in the head. Observed in surveillance footage, video surveillance footage.
Probably from inside the house.
Did you see when they were doing the search, they found him watching inside. He lives next door.
Was he watching Scream?
They didn't state. They just said he was chilling out watching a movie. And at the nod, the chainsaw was found where? The chainsaw was found somewhere stupid. Hiding the chainsaw in his knife was in his desk drawer, and his chainsaw doesn't say, it was just hidden in the house somewhere. Yeah. And he had a cut, and they asked him what, and he pretty much said that it was from an altercation with the guy he killed. And then admitted to everything.
Did he cut himself?
Huh?
Did he cut himself?
No, there was defensive wounds on the guy who was
stabbed in
trying not to die. So, yeah. So, court records are not immediately updated with the attorney of Moore. So, yeah, he is scheduled to turn up in court on April 3rd. So, I might keep an eye on this and see what happens to this idiot.
Yeah.
Please don't put on Halloween costumes and kill people.
No.
It's a bad idea. Leave it to the actors. It's stupid. It will always end with you in jail.
Yeah, it's not going to camouflage you. It's going to draw more attention to you, if anything else.
Yes. So this week, we did Fatal Attraction. And again, as I said at the start of the show, that was kind of my fault.
It's okay. As I said, I'll schedule next year.
I don't know why I thought that would be a good idea for Women's Week or Women's Month. Empowering women with an absolute lunatic.
Doesn't really. Empowers women when Beth takes control of the situation at the end.
Or when she picks up the phone and it's like, she basically kind of marks
doesn't really empower women though when she...
Stay
I mean,
away
she
from
stays,
my husband.
She stands up for herself. But like, she could have turned around and shot Michael Douglas as well. But I suppose she didn't really shoot her for having an affair with Michael Douglas.
Or did she?
But she now had an excuse that she shot her for having an affair with Michael Douglas.
Are you thinking about that while a crazed woman with a knife is trying to stab you in your bathroom? Are you really thinking about the sex she had with your husband?
No.
Or are you thinking about, if I fucking don't stop this lady right now, I am dead?
No, I would agree there. But I think afterwards, it probably would have crossed you the way, like, it's just like, it would have crossed my mind. As in to give her a good slap beforehand, before when I found out about the things. And then afterwards, I'd be like, well, two birds at one stone. I think afterwards it would kind of hit me.
Do you know what she should have done? Is after she shot Glenn Close's character, she should have just turned around and shot fucking Michael Douglas right in the foot and be like, no, we're even, you dick. And walk out. Yep.
In the foot.
When you don't want to kill the guy. And you, I mean...
I can think of other places where it's more deserved.
If she wants to stay married, then she's probably going to need those other places for her own fucking pleasures. I mean, a foot will stay enough.
Way the means, Josh.
I am sure. Sure fuck he's learned the lesson after that episode. Do you think that man cheated ever again in his life after that?
Wow.
I mean, as we watched it, I turned to you and I was like, any girlfriend who's worried about her fella going out and he's all cheating or has a problem with, like, or even suspicious of her man cheating should force them to sit down and watch this movie with her before they go out.
And just vet your mistresses better.
Couple of dates before you ride her and get her hopes up.
Then her hopes are already up, Josh.
Oh, fuck. But you were saying you wanted to do a bit of a better job with talking up women on Women's Month. Yes. So I'll let you
so
take
over. I found an article from Zocalo about women who built the horror genre. So I think it's fitting for Women's Month and because we are a horror podcast.
Yes.
So when you think of the iconic directors of horror movies, it's usually male filmmakers like Wes Craven, George Romero, John Carpenter, Tobe Hooper and David Cronenberg that come to mind. The best known women in horror tend to be screen queens, actors like Faye Ray and Jamie Lee Curtis, whose characters are frequently relegated to perpetual victim status and who may be occasionally awarded the role of a villain. But women rarely talked about are rarely talked about for their off-screen contributions to horror.
Do you know what I would disagree with in most cases of horror?
Mm.
Horror, I think, of all genres, is probably more fucking female empowering than anything else because it's the final girl. The girl always beats the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's not the guy coming in to save the girl. The girl beats the bad guy nearly every fucking time.
Nearly every time. Yeah.
Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that. But I would agree that they are usually the... That is their role. Yep. Is to run and scream for a good hour and a half before they do actually kill the person.
Exactly.
But I mean, when you look at strong movie characters, Ripley, Sydney, do you know, there's Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
There is a lot of them in our genre.
There are.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So, it may come as a surprise, though it shouldn't, to learn that women have always been at work behind the scenes, aiding in the development of the horror genre across numerous media. Millicent Patrick was the costume designer behind the Gillman from Creature from the Black Lagoon in 1945. Daphne du Maurier wrote the short story that Alfred Hitchcock even adapted as The Birds in 1963. TV horror hosts Mela Normi from Vampira and Cassandra Peterson and obviously Elvira reshaped how audiences engaged with horror films through the lens of camp and kitsch. Stephanie Rothman worked alongside B-movie legend Roger Corman for several years before going on to direct the cult horror exploitation film The Velvet Vampire in 1971. More recently, Naya DaCosta made history when Candyman, the 2021 version, became the first film directed by a black woman to debut in first place at the box office, setting a vital precedent for the future of the horror genre.
I didn't know it was a woman that directed that movie.
Did you know?
I watched a documentary about it lately.
Ah.
Do you remember what we were watching, the horror icons
horror,
kind of thing?
Yeah.
And they did the Candyman episode and I didn't realise. I thought it was a big deal because it was an all black cast and all black.
Black female director.
I didn't realize it was a female director either.
Decades earlier, women were also at the forefront of the horror genre. Between the 1920s and 1940s, pulp magazines, seen today as an ancestor of horror cinema and B-movies, as well as a direct precursor to comic books, emerged as the forum for fantasy, science fiction, and horror tales starring women in peril. While the bylines were dominated by male writers like H.P. Lovecraft and Robert Bloch, it was a woman who defined the aesthetic of one of the most influential pulp magazines during its most iconic and memorable era. Margaret Brundage, who began her career as a fashion illustrator for various Chicagoland newspaper, began painting for Weird Tales in 1933. Initially hired by editor Farnsworth Wright to produce illustrations for the adventure pulp oriental stories, Brundage was soon tasked with providing cover art for Weird Tales, the more popular of the two Wright-helmed publications. In total, Brundage was responsible for 66 of the magazine's cover illustrations between 1933 and 1945. She is the artist most associated with Weird Tales and arguably the shudder pulp genre.
Wonder how badly her career got fucked up once they brought in all those codes and stuff like that. Because they like named those kind of comic books as being like the bad ones, those fucking up kids and stuff.
Beautiful women in danger were also a favourite subject of Brundage, and the stories published in Weird Tales contained no shortage of damsels in distress to inspire her. While her painterly colourful covers often feature nude women cowering as they were beaten up, chained up, or pursued by some kind of a beast, a key element of her style was that she depicted women as aggressors, as characters with power and control in frequent, if not equal, measure. Her artwork was so popular with readers that the authors sometimes wrote scenes into their stories in hopes of inspiring a Brundage illustrated cover. Nevertheless, she was one. She was the one who bore the brunt of criticism for performing the very task that her job called for, depicting eroticized, violent scenes featuring beautiful women. H.P. Lovecraft himself criticized the sexual overtones of many of her colorful illustrations as a cheap ploy by Weird Tales editors to attract a larger audience.
Never mind that fucking racist.
I know, yeah.
I had to fucking edit your fucking stories so that I could tell him last week, you dirty racist yep. prick.
He's talking about H.P. Lovecraft, not me. It's the way you worded that. In a letter to fellow sci-fi author Robert Bloch, Lovecraft called Brundage's covers irrelevant and even worse than some of the fiction that appeared in the pages of pulp magazines, claiming not to understand the relevance of her work to the weird fiction genre.
I'm looking at them here. They're
pretty tame.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they're just kind of like, I would say horror kind of pin-up, do you know?
Yeah. I mean, with everything the girls, covered, like.
Yeah, sometimes it's just by their hands, but yeah, yeah, but, I mean, like, to the most part, I mean, you can't really blame her for it. I mean, you look at comic books in the 90s and stuff like that.
Mm.
It was every woman had a skinny waist, a big ass, and big tits. That was basically... thing. You see, that's what everyone's complaining about at the moment with the because they bought back the X-Men, you know, the 1997 cartoon.
Yeah.
So for the last 2 years, it's been this big thing. They're developing it and they're bringing it back. So it's back now. So the X-Men that we grew up on,
is
that
back.
Cartoon is back.
Okay, I'll watch it.
As soon as it came back, the first thing people did was start comparing how they had reduced the size of Rogue's button boobs to smaller. They're not as, because she always had a kind of curvy, big body, you know, sexy kind of body on her. No, it is just an average body, according to everybody, which they're not happy with. And as well as that, they have rather made, oh, what's his name? The fucking Cajun dude. Gambit.
Oh, yeah.
Is rather gay or bisexual. One of the two, and they're not happy about that either. Yeah.
I don't think you need to tweak women's, but I mean, I don't see the. I understand it to a certain degree, but I think it is stupid. I mean, women are built like that as well. Women are slender, but women are built like Rogue was built. Do you know?
No, I agree with you. But if I'm going to be running a TV company and cartoons for kids and all that stuff, my mentality is, in this day and age, I agree with you. I would agree with, yeah, keep it the way it was made back then. But I also be thinking, do I want to be listening to advertisers give out to me because the parents are giving out because no, they're sexually objectifying
I would
this cartoon
get that,
character?
But I think if I was bringing X-Men back, I'd be aiming it at a demographic more like you and me. People, I'd sit down and watch it.
It kind of is at the same time, and that's why they're giving out as well. But at the same time, it's, you know... She's a cartoon character. It shouldn't be turning you on either right a fucking way. So stop fucking looking at her ass and watch the fucking cartoon, you fucking addle babies. You fucking... Jesus Christ. Not to even think
since
about
the
what
man
we're
that
talking
raves about Jessica Rabbit.
I don't know. I said she was a childhood crush.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean I have any interest. It doesn't mean I watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit just so I can jack off over Jessica Rabbit for fucking 5 minutes. Can't say that word. God damn it. I mean, no, it is. Do you know what? Leave it in. It is that fucking... It's that... I'll censor it. I'll censor what I said so they won't hear it. It is stupid. It is absolutely ridiculous that these people who begged for something that they loved to come back, came back, and they don't want to watch it because Rogue's ass isn't sexy enough for them. Go get a girlfriend.
There is that, yeah. No, I would agree with that side of it.
Go get a girlfriend, you sad, pathetic loser. Jesus Christ. Holy...
But is it them that's giving... Well, I presume there's them.
Well, it's not the fucking kids.
Back to Brundage.
10-year-old sitting there writing an angry letter to Fox. Dear Mr. Mouse, I want Rogue's sexy ass back or I will boycott X-Men 97. No, I don't think so. It's the 40-year-old fucking nerd in his mom's basement writing that email.
Anyway... Despite such criticisms by others in her field for depicting women in vulnerable, erotically charged situations, Brundage never stopped or paid much attention to naysayers. In a 1973 interview, Brundage commented that she had been asked by Weird Tales to make larger and larger breasts, larger than she would have liked. Otherwise, she seems not to have taken much issue with the work assigned to her by the magazine. In fact, Brundage is alleged to be one of the few Weird Tales illustrators who took the time to read the magazine cover to cover, with her eyes peeled for scenes that would make for eye-catching cover art that aligned with her style and interests. Brundage's legacy as a figure in the history of the horror genre goes far beyond her cover illustrations for Weird Tales, though. As a woman artist who openly created sexually charged violent works, she paved the way for women with untraditional, perhaps indecent perspectives to find Holmes further work in the developing horror comics genre. Brundage is just one of a number of women creators who helped develop the horror genre. June Tarpey Mills was another pioneer, but she had to drop her first name when signing her work in order to create a masculine-sounding pen name. Best known for creating the early female action hero Miss Fury, who some argue is the first female superhero, she also created the Purple Zombie, or one of the earliest ongoing horror characters in comics. Mills' horror resume also includes The Vampire and The Ivy Menace, two horror tales that appeared during the late 1930s, well before horror comics gained widespread popularity. The Vampire even included a twist ending, an uncommon device for comics at the time, but which became a staple of EC horror comics by the 1950s and in cinema decades later. EC Comics dominated the horror genre with such well-remembered series as Tales from the Crypt and The Vault of Horror, but it's thanks to artist Lily Renee that horror comics gained new ground. Renee worked on The Werewolf Hunter between 1943 and 1948, creating plot ideas and drawing all manner of supernatural terrors for stories that regularly featured powerful female villains in relatively empowered roles for the era. EC's distinctive touch was also thanks to Marie Severin, EC's lone female creator. The colorist for the publisher's gory, gruesome images, she had a substantial influence on the publishing house. Severin was also a pioneer of the genre, offering using dark color palettes to define the aesthetic of the most popular horror comics of all time. By obscuring the ghastliest panels with shadowy tones, EC could get away with publishing its most shocking content.
So I had to just use shadows to hide the boobies and stuff?
Yep.
Good idea.
So like Sin City.
Shadow boobs.
These women were just a few examples of genre pioneers who today have been largely neglected by modern fans because of the male-dominated way in which the comic book history has been told. In more recent years, it's become much easier to identify the contributors,
contributions
even, women creators are actively making to the horror genre. Thanks to the works of directors like Nia DaCosta, Catherine Bigelow, Mary Lambert, Mary Harron, and Jennifer Kent, and novelists like Anne Rice and Alma Katsu, horror comics are also experiencing a renaissance thanks to the award-winning works of Emile Ferris and Marjorie Liu. Still, to hear some tell it, horror isn't a genre that women are interested in. A few years ago, contemporary horror hitmaker Jason Blum caught flack for denying that there were any or enough women who wanted to direct horror movies, though he insisted he was always trying to find one. As Blum's comments demonstrate, when it comes to the horror genre, women continue to be thought of as victims first and foremost. But with respect to screen queens like Jamie Lee Curtis, whose latest entry in the Halloween franchise opened this month. No, it didn't.
Last month, so this isn't all that here.
Yeah. We must not forget that women have been in horror from the beginning, using the genre as a form to have their voice heard in ways that are louder and more resonant than the visceral scream.
Yeah, and definitely, whatever about that, obviously, I assume there's more female directors heading that way. But you know, is the bigger stars are starting to head that direction. Because, yeah. Look at fucking we were just talking about your one, Sydney Sweeney.
Well,
she's a rising star, yeah?
Yeah, she started off young in horrors, though, with John Carpenter.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, it's still there. She's been on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
Jenna Ortega.
Mm.
Probably one of the most popular women in acting at the moment.
Mia Goth.
And she is doing nothing but horror movies. Mm-hmm. Mia Goth, another, definitely going to be a scream queen that we're watching for years.
Queen. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know, obviously it's coming from a man's perspective, but if you look at all these movies, generally, we're the bad guys, you're the good guys, and you always beat us. Nearly always.
I do agree with that. I think that sometimes certain parts of it could be are a tiny bit exploited, even though the woman does come up at the end. Yeah. I mean,
well, come here. The woman comes out in the end, but the woman is like one out of like five women that manages to come out in the end.
There is that, like, yeah.
You gotta afford to show their boobs beforehand.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're a girl who enjoys yourself, you're probably going to die. If you're the uptight girl who doesn't really want to be at the party and who is annoyed to be there, you're going to survive. You'll be fine. That makes me sound like it is like, be a slut or get killed. Oh no, if you are a slut, you get killed in me. Sorry, my bad.
You're getting this really wrong.
Yeah. We've talked about this before. Follow Jesus. Listen to Jesus and you survive horror movies.
Yep.
Oh, God. There's a movie. Surely Jesus is public domain.
I can't see Jesus not being public domain, if I'm being very honest. He died.
Jesus comes down to take away in a world where Jesus has been forgotten. Where Jesus is not, his followers are leaving the flock. Our generation is ignoring Christianity. Jesus comes to lay the smack down on all of us. Oh God, sort of like an apocalypse. Like
Do you think Jesus would come back and freak out at all the Christians for not being Jewish?
I don't know, but that's what I'm saying. Have like a rapture movie, except Jesus is the bad guy and he's coming in and he's getting retribution against all the unbelievers, which is the vast majority of us now.
Mm, yeah.
I'm telling you.
You better if Thor came back.
Jason Blum, get the fuck on to me. I got this. And I got other ideas too. Ask him. You just got to listen to it every time I drink whiskey.
Every time.
Oh, enjoy Easter. Have fun. Watch Bunny Man and other crazy horror movies to get you through it. Happy Easter. Happy Jesus' death day. Yay.
And rebirth. Happy rebirth day.
Fuck that shit. If you like that, then listen to our main show every Wednesday on all good podcast providers. It's Alive Alive, the really, really fake true crime horror podcast. All the guts and gore, none of the guilt. See you on Wednesdays.